Sherlock, or no, the Franklin Matters Radio Show, number 591 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, August 24, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. The school committee members were in the municipal building along with some of the public. Other members of the public joined via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The recording runs about an hour and 48 minutes, so I split the meeting into two segments. The first segment covers the opening through the handbook updates and the reopening status, approximately 56 minutes. The second covers the citizens' comments on the masking policy from DESE, the consent agenda, through to the closing of the meeting, approximately 53 minutes. Links to the meeting agenda and associated documents released for this meeting are included in the show notes. The link to my notes taken during the meeting is also provided. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting, August 24, 2021.
Recording in progress.
7 o'clock, I call to order the August 24, 2021 meeting of the Franklin School Committee. Just a reminder, meetings are recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. And as is customary, I read our short statement at the beginning. Members of the public are now welcome to attend committee meetings in person. Additionally, in an effort to ensure citizen engagement and comply with open meeting law regulations, citizens will be able to continue to access the public meeting using the Zoom link or phone numbers below. And is customary, we don't have a pledge person, so I will be leading the pledge, but ask if we would stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And as is customary, we pause for a moment of silence. Routine business, review of agenda. Dr. Hearn?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Bergen. In your packet, I included a memo related to the first two discussion action items on policy, which were put on the agenda in advance of tonight's meeting. And I had indicated that the Board of Education was expected to take a vote today, and they did. The board authorized the Commissioner of Education in Massachusetts, Jeff Riley, to institute required masking in public schools for all students, teachers, and staff for at least the first month of school until October 1. The purpose of the policy, according to the press statement from the department, is to encourage higher vaccination rates among students and staff and to implement a uniform policy for all schools to begin the year. It is expected that the requirement will be in place through October 1, where a threshold of 80% vaccination among students and staff would be required to lift the mask requirement on a per school basis. We expect more information to come within the next few days, and as a result, I would recommend as we review the agenda that the committee not take up those two action items and remove them from the agenda.
Thank you. I just wanted to let people know that if there's anyone, I'm setting aside time after the section on school health and safety for about a 20-minute slot for public comment. So I just wanted to make sure that it's not something we'll respond to, but I just wanted to let people know ahead of time there'll be a space if anyone would like to make a comment. We want to make sure we hear from people. It's not going to be a time to engage in debate, but we want to make sure that if anyone wishes to make a public comment, we're going to set aside a 20-minute chunk of time during that time. Citizens' comments is a section now. If there's anyone who would like to speak to something that is not on tonight's agenda,
have to make a motion to approve the agenda, the revised agenda.
I don't think so. We do we, Sarah?
I looked in our policy and I didn't see anything to that effect.
Yeah. No.
When we get to things.
And there's some.
With someone.
Oh, yes.
Citizens' comment.
Yeah, please come up. come to the mic and name and address, please. And just to read the comment about citizens' comment, just so you understand, in the spirit of open communication, the committee will hold a public participation segment, also called citizens' comments, about matters not related to an agenda item at the beginning of each regular school committee meeting. The committee will listen to, but not respond to, any comment made. A committee member may add an agenda item to a future meeting as a result of a citizen comment. The committee will hear public comments related to an agenda item when the chair deems appropriate during the committee meeting. Topics for discussion during the meeting must be limited to those items listed on the committee meeting agenda for that evening. And is our policy, we would ask if you limit comments to no more than 3 minutes. Name and address, please. Just a little, I don't think, can people hear?
No. Move the microphone up some. There we go.
What I would like to comment on is the operation that took place in this room Thursday. I do want to thank Mayor James for allowing everybody to speak. And I do like to, I don't know that man's name, but I want to thank him for keeping track of who is speaking and what section of the room goes to. So, that was really well done. That's about the only thing that was well done in that disaster. I wrote to the town administrator, Jamie Helen, about my displeasure, especially with what I thought was Franklin TV. It did not have the microphone. The those in the audience could not hear any school committee people or superintendents. They wouldn't speak up under their mask. And even when people asked them to speak up, what they did was raise their voice for 2 minutes, and then they went down to their usual low volume level. And you could see when I started this conversation, I purposely put the mask on and spoke in a low voice because that's what 35 people experienced in this room on Thursday night. I did get a reply back from Jamie explaining that the contract the town had with Franklin TV, and he said that he would forward my concerns to them. I wrote back that all the means, and maybe a little, when he wrote back, he told me about how they have to pay Franklin TV. And I said, well, maybe you should pay them a little slower since they did a very good job covering the meeting. I later received an email from Franklin's TV executive director, Peter. He informed me that the PA system is completely independent of their TV controller. He also informed me that there was a remote in which the microphones could have been turned on Thursday. The microphones worked Wednesday night. They didn't work Thursday night. That's a little suspicious, or maybe the people didn't know how to work turn on the remotes. We've been having meetings in this room for quite some time. He also told me that if the board had anticipated a very, very high public interest, Franklin TV would have been on the agenda. I don't know what cave this is. There's no interest in this. Anyways, Thursday is
just please just conclude your comments.
Movie disaster is not the way to hold open meeting meetings, in my opinion.
Thank you. All right, anyone else? So that's okay. Moving right along. Dr. Hearn, superintendent's report.
Thank you, Dr. Bergen. So a couple of things for the committee and the community this evening. The first is I want to be sure to bring awareness to the vaccine clinic tomorrow that is being sponsored by the health department here in the town of Franklin. It'll be located at the Davis Thayer parking lot from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there will also be an ice cream social. a couple of exciting things happening in the district as we prepare for back to school. Many of our former traditions are returning, including new teacher orientation. We had nearly 35 people attend the first day of new teacher orientation today, and they will continue to attend over the next 2 days. Today's learning included a segment on diversity, equity, and inclusion, where two of our teachers from the DEIPD subcommittee facilitated the Speak Up at School strategies. So the new teachers have the same background information that our current faculty and staff have in terms of interrupting bias when they see it happening. We had two differentiated groups learning about technology with our digital learning integrationists on Google. There was an orientation to student services as well as English language learning. And the day culminated with a portrait of a graduate exercise where the new teachers were exposed to the skills that are the consensus of the community and engaged in an exercise to internalize what that meant to them in their classroom or work with students. Tomorrow, the new teachers will have a conversation with the Franklin Educators Association, and the FEA is hosting a breakfast for them. I think the highlight is tomorrow morning when our new teachers will go on a bus tour of Franklin and see all of the schools and sites. They will also be oriented to educator evaluation and creating a safe environment for employees. We will conclude the day by walking, and those who wish to can drive over to the Franklin Public Library, where they will host a tour for us, which is a new item on the agenda this year. We have yet to do that before. And on Thursday, they will attend school-based activities, learning much more specifically about curriculum and instruction, technology, and other matters that are pertinent at the school level. At the last school committee meeting, there was a question about the destination for some of our surplus materials. So I wanted to circle back publicly to the committee and the community. We had over 1,700 math texts and 450 social studies texts, and I believe they're being put to good use. Canton took a small amount of the math materials, and an organization called More Than Words has arranged to pick up the remaining items for donation.
Good.
Last week, we had our administrative retreat. We've also been meeting regularly this summer for fall planning, but we had a special retreat last week to focus on some bigger picture things. The day started off with a social-emotional learning activity facilitated by our directors of curriculum, Tina Rogers and Linda Ashley, asking the essential question, what's on your plate? And creating space and time for educators to, for our administrators to identify work-life balance. And we all found like-minded administrators to connect to around similar interests. We had a reflection exercise facilitated by Principal Shannon Barca and Rebecca Motti, reflecting on education last year and ourselves professionally as leaders. What are our lessons learned? What should we keep and what should we not keep as we head back to school next week? Mr. Jagir, Ms. Morano, and I facilitated a data analysis protocol to dive deeper into the panorama survey data from the faculty and staff well-being survey that they took at the end of the school year, so that we could consider how we use the information in bringing staff back and students back to school next week. And then our day concluded with Google tips from our digital learning integrationists as well to focus on our technical skills, technological skills. Oftentimes our retreats are over multiple days, but as I said, we've been meeting throughout the summer and decided to focus this one in one day this time around. And lastly, I have just a few reminders about the schedule over the next couple of weeks. On Monday, we open our doors to faculty and staff, although plenty of people have been in the buildings this week, getting things set up and ready for students. Grades 1 through 12 begin school on Tuesday. Preschool and kindergarten have delayed starts due to screening appointments in the early days. Friday, September 3rd is a full day of professional development. And Tuesday, September 8th is Rosh Hashanah, where we have no school. I do anticipate that we will share a summary of our professional development day with you as a review of PD that occurred at the next school committee meeting. And as we open up back to school, I want to be sure to thank our partners, particularly from the town departments, who are working sometimes potentially unseen or seemingly unseen to ready our schools. The facilities department has done special projects this summer, and the custodial staff has been busy readying rooms and doing their customary cleaning. And the technology department has been hard at work, first cataloging all of the hardware that was entered into the district last year, making sure that it is up to speed to be reissued when students return, as well as managing the hardware for teachers, especially getting new teachers their laptops ready for today. And the Department of Public Works taking care of the grounds in advance of school opening. This is a great team to work with, and I just want to make sure that they have our appreciation and accolades.
Okay, just before we go any further, it turns out, hard to believe, but I was incorrect, and Jen was correct about, we do have to vote to remove the items A and B under the discussion action items. So at this point, I would entertain a motion to remove from the agenda under discussion action items, policy waiving first reading, A and B, policy adoption. I would entertain a motion to remove those from tonight's agenda. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussions? Seeing none, vote will come on the motion to remove these two items, A and B, from the agenda. And I guess we don't have to do roll call vote, do we?
No.
So all we just have to do, because I'm so used to doing a roll call, we don't do it. So it's all in favor of the removing A and B from the agenda?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Yes. Thank you for that, Jen. I did not know that, so thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, now moving. Did anyone have any follow-up comments on superintendent's report? I just want to make sure if any members. Okay, moving right along then. Now we go to accept collaborative. We go into C because we're skipping A and B. We go right to C, accept collaborative capital reserve. Dr. Hearn.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Elise has to leave. She has an interest in an association, so just per protocol, she cannot participate. So she's recusing herself from this. Thanks, Elise. Dr. Hearn?
Thank you. So ACCEPT is one of the collaborative.
Could you just put the microphone closer?
Sure.
Thank you.
ACCEPT is one of our collaboratives that we belong to, primarily for special education services. And I serve, because you have voted to have me serve on the board of directors of the ACCEPT collaborative. And a memo was issued from the executive director to the board of directors, as well as the collaborative member school committees, requesting the creation of ACCEPT's capital reserve account with a balance limit of $1 million for the purpose of accumulating funds for the acquisition, maintenance, and improvement of capital items. I think this is a pretty common, a common thing we see even within our own town in terms of how funds are allocated. And I would recommend approval of the creation of ACCEPT's capital reserve fund with a balance limit of $1 million for the purpose of accumulating funds for the acquisition, maintenance, and improvement of capital items.
And I will entertain a motion at this time to.
The question.
Oh, all right. But okay, let me do the motion, and then we'll do any questions or comments. Is there a motion to accept the approval of the creation of ACCEPT's capital reserve with a balance limit of $1 million for the purpose of accumulating funds for the acquisition, maintenance, and improvement of capital items? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
How about questions or discussion? Judy, go ahead.
Okay, I have a few questions. My understanding is there's 158 member districts. Are they all to vote on this same motion?
That it's not 158, is a smaller number than that. Maybe 15 member districts.
I'm getting this information from their annual report 17-2017-2018.
It's not 158 districts. That may be the number of districts that send students there. You don't have to be a member district to send students to attend their programs. but without seeing the report, I don't, I'm not sure what that number is referring to.
Okay, how many, I know except is in the Franklin schools. Is it in all of our schools or in some schools?
So you may be thinking of BICO, where one of the BICO programs, that's the other collaborative that we have, is in our schools. We do not have any accept programs in our schools. We do send students to out-of-district placements there. They have programs in some other schools. They also have their own building where they have some of their school programs within their own building in Natick.
So all students that are in the Franklin system bused to some other place, they're not educated by except in the Franklin schools?
Not in our physical school buildings, no. Okay.
So how many children do we have as part of except?
I'm looking to Ms. Morano maybe to give us an estimate, and Ms. Goodman.
Maybe 10 at the most.
10?
10.
So 10 of them bust off. What are capital items as defined by except?
Capital items would be things like furniture and equipment, capital, some of the typical things that we think of capital materials that they would need for their classrooms in their physical location.
So if there are existing member districts, do each member district pay the same amount of money?
Each member district has an assessment, and Miriam can elaborate on that.
So member districts pay...
I can't hear anybody with their mask on. Everything gets muddled up. I know I'm old, but I have hearing aids in, and I still can't hear you clearly with the mask on.
Member districts pay $4,000 to be a member of the ACCEPT Collaborative. That is the amount that we pay. There are assessments for other items, such as the transportation program. We do not participate in ACCEPT's transportation program, but they do make assessments to other districts for those types of services that they provide.
So how much money are we going to be putting for this?
We are not putting money into this account. This would be from cumulative surplus that they have from their budget that they would put into capital, similar to how free cash may become available in the town for capital expenses here.
So we have no cumulative surplus account?
We don't, personally, as Franklin Public Schools.
Okay. I also noticed in their annual write-up that there were many towns in their communities whose either community organizations or businesses provided vocational experience in community outings for ACCEPT students. But Franklin wasn't listed as any one of those towns that provide either one of those.
We have, so I'm not sure where their vocational placements are. We do have, for some of our students that are in our transition program at the high school, we do have vocational placements in Franklin, as well as in surrounding communities.
Okay, I guess that's it for me, thank you.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, we have a motion and a second and no further discussion. Seeing none, the vote will come in the motion. All those in favor of approving the creation of ACCEPT's capital reserve with a balance limit of $1 million for the purpose of accumulating funds for the acquisition, maintenance, and improvement of capital items. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Elise, you can come back now.
Can Elise come back?
Yes. Dr. Hearn, school handbooks and back to school health and safety.
Sure, thank you. So the next item on the agenda is for your approval of the school handbooks as discussed. And we're also including the back to school health and safety plans, which I think read like a handbook. And so we're including that in the request for approval as well. I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. DeGeer, who has been working with our assistant principals on the school handbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. For your approval are the handbooks. If you remember last year, we provided a handbook with a COVID addendum, and in the addendum, it included health and safety with a few other informational pieces that related to how school would work when we were in a hybrid model. This year, with school full and in person, the assistant principals and the principals work together to review their section one and section two of their handbooks to go back to what we experienced pre-pandemic. With that in mind, you'll notice I made a note on some behavioral pieces that we're implementing at the middle and the high school related to tiered supports and tiered responses, which align with some of our future goals around tiered instruction. You'll notice that in the middle school handbook, they had some work that they had done around restorative justice and supportive accountability, as it's called through the Changing Gears book that we used to focus the work. I'm really trying to explain behavior from the standpoint of what's expected behavior from a positive, but also have very clear expectations for students as they enter school. So that carried over from the COVID addendum into the actual handbook. And at the high school, they had a code of conduct. It's now a code of conduct, character, and support. So they placed in there, you'll notice that in highlighted in green, are some of the interventions that take place before a student's disciplined, things that we try to implement before we get to that point, but then also looking at what would constitute a student needing to be removed from class, trying to be clearer as opposed to a bulk list of infractions. We tried to look at what types of behavior could be handled within the classroom from the teacher, which would result in a referral, and then which ones really rise to the level of needing a student to report to the office. So we just tried to get clearer with that. This is an evolving process as we continue to develop and educate students and staff and families on our response to all things from academic to behavioral to SEL, and trying to figure out to try to lay that out. You'll see that this work will continue. We tried to chunk off what was manageable this summer to handle, and we decided that instead of a COVID addendum, it made sense to have the health and safety in a separate handbook, as Dr. Ahern described, that we can cover next. But I'll pause there to just hit on any school handbook questions. Lunch is also free this year for all students again, which we updated in the handbooks.
Let me just go through and see if anyone has any comments, questions on the committee. Elise, I'll start with you, anything?
Yeah, I definitely support being the clarity and increased transparency around that restorative practices piece. And I can see the edits in the high school handbook, but I was looking at the Annie Sullivan Middle School and I couldn't, like, there's nothing standing out in green to me.
In the section two, so the middle schools work together. You might not see it in Annie Sullivan because the code of conduct, all three middle schools, in an effort, as you know, a theme is to try to bring all of our schools closer together with expectations.
Yeah.
In section two, which is level specific, so all middle schools, yeah, we put that information so that all of the assistant principals are reacting consistently across the school. So no matter what school you're in, it's the same expectation for students when they come in. So that's
all right,
a good
gotcha
question.
So when a parent gets one of the middle school handbooks from the section one above, are those section two middle school level section two policies going to be attached to that?
They'll be combined.
Oh, good,
I
good.
Broke them up for just so it was easy for us to process, but
gotcha,
they will be combined into one handbook, so a Remington parent would see the whole thing together in one document.
Just seamlessly.
Yes.
Okay. Well, more kudos, I guess, for looking at consistency across buildings, because that's important.
And the same goes for elementary as well. Mm-hmm. They have a level-based document in the same way, and we'll continue to make changes in that way as well, across the board, consistently.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is that Elise?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about Denise?
Is this just for handbooks?
Yeah, just handbooks.
No, I just wanted to say thank you for, I know that it's been a busy time of year, so thank you very much to you and all of the vice principals for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
MJ, any comments on that?
Yes.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, the ECDC manual?
Yes.
The list of school committee members? Schofield has no H.
I will take care of that.
Okay.
I apologize.
Thank you. That was,
sure.
Seeing it there, it was like, ooh, I wonder if it's anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's highlighted to change Joyce to Linda in ECDC.
Very good. I apologize for that. We'll take care of it.
Thanks, Lucas.
Sure.
Okay, the high school graduation requirements. The way I was looking at it, the chart that's in there, it needs to be updated to reflect the classes of 22, 23, 24, and 25. Elise?
Yes, I see. So there's a, just for the folks at home, there's a chart that lays out graduation classes and the requirements for each. So what happened is those dates were not updated in this handbook. So what we can do is look at that, and I can make those adjustments and edits.
Okay. And just a question about independent study. You know, it's noted in a couple of places that it isn't included in class rank. I'm just curious as to why.
It's not a graded course. So are you talking about study, like a study hall or an independent study?
No, independent study project.
Independent study.
You know, the seniors have their senior projects. Are those
yes,
graded?
Yes, those are graded. That's a graded course. I'd have to look into the independent study piece.
Okay.
Just because I'm not clear on, do you know where you saw it?
The high school.
Okay, I'll take a look. But I know that senior project is graded. They do receive a grade, a teacher. Runs that course. Independent studies, I always thought you meant study hall where a kid may have a study period.
Okay, sorry, I don't have it
yeah.
in front of me, and I'd be able to tell you.
That
I should have marked
26.
It. But that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Judy, did you have any follow up?
No, I'm all set. Thank you.
All set. Tim?
I'm okay.
You okay? Jen?
I'm all set. Thank
all set?
You.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Moving right along.
So I'll jump in, and I'll invite Lucas and Miriam and Paula to join in as well. The second part of the handbook piece is around health and safety practices for the fall. Some are remaining in place and some are proposed to change based on the information that we have, different regulations coming out from the Department of Education. And so I framed the document, which is 11 or 12 pages long, into just some modified set of slides, and I say modified because they're similar to what I had shared with policy subcommittee meeting last week. And this is intended to be pretty broad and cover pre-K through 12. There are more individual specifics for each school. There may be some level-based differences based on the age of children, but we also know that each physical building is slightly different in terms of its makeup, and so there does need to be some flexibility there. And hopefully we don't lose power on the computer. So our goal is full-time in-person learning for all students 5 days a week. We know that there is no fully remote option permissible. And these images are from High School Experience last week, or maybe it was the week prior, where students, freshmen and sophomore students, were coming in, working together in the gym or in a science lab cooperatively. And families can certainly expect more cooperative learning. I think it's important to note that our instruction is going to look different than it did last year. Anticipate less screen time for our youngest students, more cooperative learning opportunities, and meaningful inclusion of technology, of course, because we have seen places where that can really be leveraged. In terms of no remote options, in addition to not having a fully remote option, we are not planning to have the ability for students who are out of school be able to virtually attend their classes. I think that would take away from the in-person learning. And so there's no such thing as a virtual present anymore. So absences, students would be marked absent. And staff who are out as a result of COVID-related matters or for other reasons are not going to be able to teach remotely. So this is going to look a little bit more traditional, although I would say certainly informed by some of the lessons that we've learned through teaching and learning last year. But I think that has implications as it relates to health and safety, as well as COVID cases, quarantines, isolations, and the like, because again, our goal is to have students full and in person and learning. This is a slide, similar ones you've seen in the past, where each health and safety mitigation strategy is inherently flawed, but taken together, these layers provide adequate protection. And the layers that you see in the 11 pages of the document are designed to keep people safe and in school. So the next couple of slides just are tables to kind of give you a summary of the strategy. Was it in place last year and what we're planning for the fall? So naturally, hand sanitizing is expected to continue next year. Cleaning and disinfecting will continue, although we have learned a lot about the potential for over-cleaning and over-disinfecting. And so some of the repeated deep cleaning practices are deemed really not necessary in terms of containing COVID. So we will have disinfecting protocols, but it will be reduced as compared to last year. But there will be routine cleaning of high-touch areas. We'll ask people to continue to self-monitor and stay home when sick. And in the document, there is a list of COVID symptoms. There is a distinction, though, between the symptoms that a vaccinated individual might monitor for themselves and stay home versus an unvaccinated individual. And that information is contained within the document. Last year, we were having staff complete a form to attest that they were not experiencing symptoms and had not been exposed to COVID-19 and included temperature taking. We are proposing to not continue with that. We believe we have a very high level of vaccination rate among staff and don't feel that this step is needed any longer. Although we will ask people to self-monitor and stay home when sick. In terms of ventilation, we were partially in effect last year as we worked on installing UVGI, but the ultraviolet irradiation is in Franklin High School, as well as in spaces that are connected by common ductwork in our pre-K to 8 schools. And we have ample amounts of portable HEPA filtration units, both large and small, across the district. We do also anticipate having windows open as feasible, and certainly windows on the bus open to promote air circulation. Additional layers of protection include vaccines. It's in effect for many of our individuals in our school community ages 12 and up. So that's what I mean by partially, but it at this point is not being mandated. We are continuing to monitor vaccine rates among children and the general population in Franklin. And I anticipate with the DESE mask requirement, having more data about staff vaccination. We have some anecdotal information about high vaccination rates, but we will need to quantify that with the DESE mask requirement. And we know that booster shots have just been announced, and I think we're eagerly awaiting for that time where 11 and under can be vaccinated. We, up until this point, have been operating under the policy from last year. We expect more details about a mask mandate to come in the next few days. And as you know, the policy for next year has been under discussion, but again, tonight you tabled that, and we are expecting more information from the state. We anticipate that they will include exemptions for medical or behavioral reasons with documentation from a qualified health provider. We expect there to be a requirement to continue. The state department's not going to change the federal mandate on school buses and in school health offices. And we expect that masks will not be required outside. In terms of distancing, this is one of the bigger differences from last year to this year. There is no minimum distancing standard that we're striving for. We are looking to distance as feasible in our schools. In some places, including, for example, our high school, distancing is a bit difficult to do because of the number of students and how big high school students are. And And so the flip side of that is that there's a different mitigation strategy with the vaccines, and many of our high schoolers do have the vaccination. Distancing is not a reason to not be fully in person. And lunch is probably the biggest area where people will be seeking some reassurance around distancing. Again, at the high school, it'll be difficult for us to do too much distancing at lunch. I would note, you know, that there is plans being put in place for pre-K through 8 to distance as feasible during lunch when students are going to be eating and being unmasked, as well as plans for snack so that there's distancing or maybe some strategies applied to keep everybody safe during those times. But like I said, we're not having a minimum standard. So last year we were very strict with a 6 feet of distance at lunch, and now it'll it'll vary and be as much as possible. And we are looking to have students facing the same direction if they're eating inside. In classrooms, we want students to be cooperating together. We want students to be learning together, engaging in play. So we anticipate there to be less distancing in classrooms, although there may be at times certainly when students are seated farther apart. And that's going to be based on the instructional objectives in terms of what the lessons are looking like. This next slide has a lot to do about testing, and I want to give a shout out and accolades where they're due with Ms. Murano. She has been working with Patty Elias, our nurse leader, very closely, and she has been keeping up to speed on what the state is providing for testing options. The Department of Education is paying for testing options for schools and districts, and there are three different types of testing programs. One is the routine COVID safety check, what had formerly been pool testing. We had employed this March through the end of the year last year. We're not looking to start the school year with this. We wouldn't recommend it. It was somewhat labor intensive for administrators and nursing staff, and I think we'd like to be able to apply their skills in other directions to start the year. And we had relatively low participation rates that really decreased over the course of the year, particularly as the vaccines came out. I think it's something that is a tool that we may consider using in the future. So I wouldn't rule it out and eliminate it entirely. If we saw, for example, high positivity rates and spikes locally in Franklin, it might be a tool that we look to apply, but not something that we're looking to start the year with. There is a test and stay protocol for contact tracing. So if a school-based close contact is identified, instead of being quarantined, that individual can be allowed in the school building. They will need to be masked and, where possible, kept 3 feet of distance apart from others, and tested with the Binex Now test for a week, which I think is 5 days, so it'll end up being 5 school days with the weekends to see if they end up testing positive. The individual will monitor for symptoms for 14 days, and this would include athletes. The expectation would be that athletes would be tested on weekends to be sure that they're eligible for any competitions they have, or other individuals if they had music performances or plays. It wouldn't just be limited to athletes, to make sure that they're eligible for that weekend participation. That is something that we would like to proceed with. We have been approved for this type of testing through our application, and it's something that we think will be helpful in terms of keeping students in school and in the building. There's also symptomatic testing using the Binax Now antigen test. This was not something that we had used last year, but we have been approved to use it this year, and symptomatic individuals would be tested in school. And we anticipate that there may be some positive individuals identified as a result of that. The isolation protocols is contained in the document, and there's quite a few depending upon vaccination status and whether or not the individual is participating in one of the testing programs. What we do know is that COVID positive individuals would be directed to isolate for 10 days. And, you know, one of the things, you know, a lot of people are talking about COVID and vaccinated individuals not getting as ill. Also people talking about children not getting as ill if they have COVID. But the attendance rates and having people out of the building, particularly staff, is a practical implication that we need to be planning for. And if individuals are out, you know, we do worry about subcoverage like we did last year. Medical waiting areas, schools are designating spaces in the health office or a separate room for individuals who may be experiencing COVID symptoms. Lastly, we have, we're monitoring health data, and in the back to school updates, we've been communicating that with you and posting it as part of the school committee meeting packet. So we'll continue to publish the health metrics on a bi-weekly basis, and we will add different data points should they be relevant to the current year. We are planning to continue COVID communications, although I propose that we change the frequency slightly, just given the new year. So the idea is that we'll communicate directly with individuals who test positive, and if those are students with their families, and we will communicate directly and in a timely way with close contacts identified in the school building. So those would be, you know, things that may be happening with a frequency of daily. But what I would like to change are the daily letters going out to families related to cases being in the building, and instead publish a weekly update related to that week's COVID cases and close contacts, so that we can keep tabs of the data but not inundate people with a lot of similar messages. The other thing that would be a very welcome change for this year is to have more visitors to our schools. Visitors did not come into our schools last year. I think we're cautious about having large events, but having visitors permitted to participate in school activities, including having in-person meetings, volunteering, is something that we are really excited about. And visitors would be expected to comply with the health and safety practices like a staff member would. There may be a few additional items in the document, and happy to take any comments or questions and along with the team, but wanted to present a few highlights and compare last year to this year, so you can see what we're looking to do.
Elise, do you have any comments, questions, follow-up?
Sure. I think my question, as you had mentioned, was the high school lunches, how they're busy and the rooms are full. I know some other districts have an open campus during lunchtime, and I don't know if that's something that Franklin's ever considered.
We've had the request. I guess I would frame open campus in terms of weighing risks. And I think that when you have students rushing out of school for a short duration of time for lunch, you increase risks in other ways. So I'm reluctant to suggest it.
Gotcha. It was just a thought I was having as we were listening. So then if students are quarantined, are they able to access course material, not virtual instruction? But are they going to have a packet, or, you know, is the teacher going to assign homework, or like how might that look? I assume it would be different by level.
I think it'll be different by level, but absolutely, just like with normal absences that students experience, they will be able to access their work as they're able if they're sick. Mm-hmm. You know, we want them to get better, but they'll be able to complete work. So it might be at the younger grades something more like a packet. At the older grades, Google Classroom has really become a staple of organization. And so I would anticipate middle school and high school, a lot of that to be issued through Google Classroom, and students will be able to keep up with their work.
Okay, gotcha. So it ends up being like a makeup work
yeah.
situation.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Denise.
Yes, thank you.
Alrighty.
To kind of piggyback off of what Elise just said, so my concern is, you know, say children are out more than once, they're not going to, I know that they'll be marked absent, but they won't be marked truant, correct?
Right.
They won't.
If the district, if this is approved in a plan and we're saying to you that because you have COVID that you have to be out, we're basically saying you need to isolate or quarantine. So therefore it wouldn't impact a student from a truancy standpoint, like cutting school or, you know, the type of thing.
Unexcused absences. And
yes.
Such. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Okay. Vaccines, how are we monitoring the percent? So I know that, you know, how do we know that the high school is at a certain percent? How do we know that the staff is at a certain percent? How are you getting that information? How do we know how accurate that is?
So we have some options. And right now the information that we have is through for students is not specific to Franklin Public School students, but it's children in Franklin, and we're monitoring data from the Department of Public Health and using that as you know, kind of a general sense of where we are as a community. We're going to need to ask individuals their vaccine status. I believe that the Department of Education's plan that they're gonna put out with their requirements mm-hmm. Is based on an attestation versus collecting vaccine card information. That being said, vaccine information may come to us through medical information, similar to other items from a student perspective. And then we will need to ask staff the same questions about vaccine status.
Okay. Riley had mentioned today during the, I'm sorry, Commissioner Riley in the meeting today had mentioned not just using vaccine rates as a benchmark, as he didn't really elaborate. I wasn't sure if maybe you had more information that you received. Probably not, since it was just this morning.
I don't have additional information, although somewhere in one of the articles I read or a press release, what I thought he might be referring to is a situation where let's say the numbers are potentially improved from where they are today and you have an 80% vaccine rate, then vaccinated individuals can remove their masks. Hypothetically, there is another spike, the numbers skyrocket, there's a new variant, something changes, that there might actually be a situation where there's a metric for the masks to return. That's speculation and something that I read and reading in between the lines that might be what he's thinking. We won't know until something gets issued.
Okay. So we are expecting some kind of guidance from him at some
yes.
point.
Okay.
Right, at some point. And then I'm just to kind of circle back to lunches. Have we thought about it all? I don't want to say assigned seats, but like a pod. I'm just wondering, you know, for close contact purposes, if people are eating lunch and someone tests positive, how do you then know if you're a close contact?
I think lunch continues in full transparency at the high school to be difficult every period because the schedule rotates. You could mm-hmm. have lunch during your history class on Monday and then your math class on Tuesday. So to assign seats would be very complex. I don't know if that is feasible at the other levels. They've created individualized seating
okay.
In there. So from pre-K to, or from K to eight, they
okay.
were able to work with the desks to have students sit in individual spots. But
okay,
that's
so if like Johnny tests positive, we know who he sat near for lunch.
We would
okay.
know that. Yeah, at the K to eight level, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Pre-K to eight.
All right. Thank you.
I would just add, having talked with the high school, they're also suggesting that the cameras that are in the cafeteria would also potentially help identify close contacts
okay.
In the lunchroom.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's it. Yeah.
Excellent. MJ?
Yeah. Question about athletes being tested on the weekends. I think it was the last slide. Those are only people who have been positive during the week.
or is that for?
Those are individuals who are identified as close contacts.
Okay.
Yep, that was not proposed as sort of a universal screening program. That was if they're a close contact and they are under the test and stay watch, that they could continue to participate in their extracurriculars over the weekend, but they need that Saturday test or that Sunday test.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All set.
Good. Yep.
Judy?
All set, thank you.
Tim?
Yeah, a couple things. So first, great to see all the strategies in place and being thought about to help keep the kids in school. I think that's a great sign that there's seems to be universal agreement that having kids in school in spite of everything that's going on is a great goal. And so that's great that there's a lot of strategies, as well as to keep them going on their extracurricular activities, the athletes, the performers, and everybody else. Great to see that recognition and the value in all of those things. And in regards to the Board of Education mask policy that seems to be coming down, as a kind of analytics person, I'm at least pleased that there's some metric out there and a goal for how we're gonna get out of masks. Masks stink. You know, we wear them if we, you know, need protection, and can't wear them forever. So it's good to know that there is a pathway that's being laid out for people to try to reach that goal on the vaccination rate in order to get out of the masks. So happy to see that as well.
All set, Tim. Jen?
I'm all set.
All set. Did you have
them? Paula?
Oh,
yes.
The blight.
Could you pull the line?
The blight.
Please.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.